Side Hustle Show 254, Freelance to Freedom, from 30 grand a year to 30K in a day. What's up? What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show. Because your dream job is out there, you've just got to create it. Hat tip to Jared Martin for sharing that one. And it's appropriate because this is an episode about creating your dream job. My guest today thought he had it, at least on the work front, but it just didn't come with the dream job salary. This is Vincent Puglisi from VincentPuglisi.com.
It was what I was considering my dream job. 10 years earlier, I had started in photography. I'd landed a great newspaper job. I was in Evansville, Indiana, my wife and I both. And it was a beautiful situation. I got to travel to shoot the NFL. I used to cover the Rams and the Colts and the Titans. I shot the Super Bowl with them and all big events.
Yeah.
But we wanted to start a family, and we were both making, you know, $15 an hour and working crazy hours as newspaper and journalists do. So you don't really think about it too much. You just kind of survive.
So here's Vincent, early to mid 30s, baby on the way, six figures in debt, most of which is a mortgage, and earning $15 an hour. But this is where the story gets crazy, because fast forward 4 years, he's debt-free, he's still taking pictures for a living, but he's doing it as a freelancer, making more money and working fewer hours. That's freed up all sorts of time to work on other projects like business coaching. He's got a new book called Freelance to Freedom. You can find it at freelancetofreedombook.com, and even an online training course that did 30 grand on launch day, which gave us the hook from 30 grand a year to 30K in a day, from surviving to thriving. Stay tuned to hear how he got it done and how you can apply similar strategies to the skills on your own resume. Notes and links from this one are at sidehustlenation.com/Vincent. It's V-I-N-C-E-N-T. While you're there, you'll also be able to download the free PDF highlight reel summary with all of Vincent's top tips from this conversation. We're talking freelance to freedom today, and as you begin your journey, or maybe you're already a few steps down the path, I hope you're a few steps down the path, there's a tool you're going to want in your toolbox, and that's FreshBooks. FreshBooks is the affordable small business accounting solution built specifically for side hustlers and freelancers. I'd like to thank FreshBooks for sponsoring today's show and really for being a longtime partner of the Side Hustle Show. Invoicing and time tracking is built right in, so when it's time to get paid, think FreshBooks. And as a Side Hustle Show listener, they're hooking you up with a 30-day completely free trial at freshbooks.com/sidehustle. That's freshbooks.com/sidehustle to start your 30-day free trial today. I'll be back with my top takeaways from this conversation with Vincent after the interview. Now, let's set the stage. From Evansville, Indiana, Vincent has just won the most prestigious award in his industry, International Sports Photographer of the Year. That's a big deal. So he's good at what he does. So he goes in to talk to his boss at the newspaper about getting a raise, and the conversation doesn't really go how he expected it to. Ready? Let's do it.
So I had my big meeting. This was in June, and Andrew, our son, was due in July. And I sat down, and my boss said, I can remember him rubbing his eyes and taking off his glasses. And he said, I did the best I could. He said, everybody else is getting nothing because budget. He goes, I got you 3% as a raise.
Oh.
And I looked at him and I said, 3% of your salary might be something, but on $32,000, 3% isn't anything. And he couldn't even laugh, even though with our relationship, he would have laughed because we had a really, good relationship together.
Yeah.
And he said, there's nothing else. I tried for 4%. And I remember thinking, he tried for 4% and couldn't even get 4%.
Yeah. And you're like, 4% nothing is nothing.
It's nothing. So I still remember like yesterday standing in the door frame of his office and I said, it's over. I said, this is over. And this was like my dream. This was the one, it wasn't like some job that I just had. Like, this was what I wanted to do.
Did you have a number in your head? Like, what would have been an acceptable raise?
Yeah, if he would have given me 10%, which what I was thinking and expecting, I would have stayed.
Okay.
There would have been no problem. I would have been, okay, I'm going to make 40. I don't know what it would be.
Yeah.
38 grand. And I would have been thrilled with it. I would have been, okay, I get to do what I want to do. But something about the 3% just hit me in the gut. I was like, this is never going to change. And I looked out in the newsroom and I saw everybody that just and it kind of just started hitting me. Everybody's complaining. Nobody has any money. Nobody has control of their time. When I want vacation next June, I have to put in for it in September. And I remember like, I have no freedom. Even though I like the stuff that I do, I have no freedom. So that day, instead of going out looking for pictures, I went home and I got angry. And I called my dad to see if I can get some side work with him because I knew I was going to have to make some money.
Yeah.
My son's being born.
Yeah. I got diapers to buy. I got baby, whatever formula and all this stuff.
All stuff. And my wife wants to stay home if we can. So that was an interesting day.
Yeah. You're going from the prospect of going from two incomes to one plus having additional expenses. Okay. So you call up dad And yeah. So dad has a, what's dad's business?
He is a draftsman. So he basically in New York, he drafts the for the architects to build buildings.
Okay. But you're in Indiana.
I'm in Indiana, but I used to work for him. When I lived in New York, because I'm from New York, I used to do side work for him.
Okay.
So I called him up thinking maybe I could just make some extra work through him. You know, if I could do some extra work with him while I do my job, it could pay for, like you said, it could pay for diapers, it could pay for formula. And he shot me down. He said, I can't help you. He said, everything's changed in 10 years. I'd need to train you again. You're 15 hours away. And he said to me, instead of like just saying, okay, let me write you a check or sugarcoating it, he said, you know what? He didn't say this, you're screwing up, but it's what he implied. He said, you know, you have a skill, but you're not using it correctly. Because for years he told me, you could shoot weddings, you could do corporate work. Why are you just doing this? And I was like, no, I'm a journalist, you know, basically I'm too good for weddings. Like that's, wedding photography is not what we want to do.
Yeah.
So he said, you have a skill, but you're not using it correctly. And I listened to him for the first time in a while. And that really just hit me when he said that. And that changed, literally changed our life from that moment on.
You have a skill, but you're not using it correctly. And I think this applies for so much more than just something like photography. I mean, the newspaper was treating your pictures as a commodity. I mean, they needed to run the paper every single day, whereas a bride is like going to cherish these pictures forever. And so the price point is significantly higher.
Completely different.
But I didn't even realize there's a stigma apparently against, well, you're trained as a journalist. So there's a stigma against like shooting weddings.
There was. It's less now, you know, with the journalism world collapsing, it's kind of like, oh, wait a second. You know, you used to be able to make a good living for the most part, a decent living, and you got to do what you wanted to do. And there really was. I mean, I hate to say it, but it was like, I'm not a wedding photographer, I'm a journalist. Yeah. There really was some of that arrogance. And I could laugh about it now, but I really meant it then. So he said that to me and I was like, okay. I said, what do you mean? So I just kind of, I succumbed and I listened and he explained it to me. And I said, okay, what else can I do? You know, I can't get another job. So I started calling wedding photographers out of the phone book. They had we still had a phone book. And every one of them told me no. And they knew who I was.
Like, I'll be your second shooter for whatever upcoming dates you have.
Exactly. Can I help you out? Can I do this? Could I do that? And they all basically said, okay, you know, no. I think there were about 12 people.
Okay.
That said no. And I still remember like sweating, sitting on our bed, being like, what? It was like mid-June, it's so hot. And I'll never forget, I took the phone book and I threw it against the wall as hard as I could. And I, you know, you always hear like, well, if you can't beat them, join them. And I said to myself, I said, well, if you can't join them, beat them. That's okay. The only thing you can do. And I remember saying that, staring at the wall, and I said, we're starting a business. I knew nothing about what I was talking about. I knew nothing about business. I never studied it. I studied photography. I studied to get a job. So that moment on, we shot a couple weddings for free. Elizabeth went to a church and she found a bride that was just kind of doing wedding planning. And she just offered to do the wedding for free. The girl loved it and told her friend about it who hired us. So we got 4 weddings booked within 3 months for money. And then the next year we had 25 weddings booked.
Well, this is kind of the paradox of it. Is like, well, you need experience to get the gigs. You need a portfolio to get the gigs and you need the gigs to get the portfolio. So you said, yep. Okay, I'm going to raise my hand. I'm going to do the first one for free to get some wedding pictures, basically.
Yep. And I went through my portfolio and, you know, we had taken our camera to a couple of friends' weddings. So I had some pictures from there and I did an assignment for a newspaper where it was a wedding. So I literally had 40 pictures from 3 different weddings that we never got paid a dime for. That was our first website.
Okay. Okay. Makeshift portfolio. Okay.
And Elizabeth built, what was it? I'm trying to think, Dreamweaver was the name of the program that Elizabeth used to develop a rickety old website just to get pictures up. You know, it was 2005.
Yeah.
And it was funny because we were in our class for having Andrew, like a birthing class. And the teacher said, oh, I see you guys are photographers. My daughter's getting married. And I was like, okay. And we used to say no to everything. And we're like, yes. So we had a meeting and she put together the website and she booked us. This was like within a month of the whole thing happening. We made, I think it was $1,500. And we're like, wait a second, we're going to make $1,500 in one day when I'm coming home with $100 a day at the newspaper.
Yeah.
And your mind just starts going. And then the next wedding got higher and we're like, wait, okay, something's happening here.
That's awesome. So you still work in the newspaper and now like come next wedding season, like it's full for it. Like we're, you know, stigma aside, we're going full.
We're going.
Head on into this.
Yes. And what we didn't do is we didn't quit our job, even though I wanted to. We knew. We got to get the boat close to the dock. So when we're ready to go, we don't sink. So we basically, what we decided to do, which I think I had never read in any book, but I came up with this idea. And I said, well, if we could live off of my salary, if we could just live off of my salary and we could pay down our debt, because we had $140,000 in debt. if we could pay down our debt with the business money, by the time the debt's paid off, the business is going to be mature. So there's no chance of doing something stupid.
This was credit card debt, the house?
And our house. Yeah. Student loan and the house. So we just made this pact. We're going to put every dime towards the debt. So 3.5 years later, we paid off everything, including the house.
Wow. What did that look like in terms of the hustle required and the sleep and the raising of a baby and, you know, shooting weddings every weekend? Like, you know, what did that look like?
Everybody thought we were crazy. Everybody thought, you know, my mother-in-law, my parents got it a little bit. They understood. I think they saw the pain. First thing we learned was that it wasn't as hard as we thought. It wasn't as painful as we thought. Because as we kind of reduced the outgo and we kind of took kind of some of the luxuries out of our life, we were like, we don't really miss this. We kind of like the simple life. We don't miss it. So, okay, we can sacrifice. Let's just see if we could do a little bit more. And by the time we got there, we got so engaged by it. And then what happened was we started envisioning our future for the first time ever. It wasn't just, I just want to get a car and I want to just do this weekend. It was like, wait, what do we want life to look like? And that was maybe the most important thing. So we kind of laid out 10 years from now, we might have 2 or 3 kids. What do we want to be doing? Do we want to be shooting 30 weddings a year? And even then we said, no, but we want to build this up so we have the freedom to do that. So when we sat down and we kind of described what we wanted life to look like, maybe not what we'd be working on, but what we wanted to be able to do every day,
okay,
which was wake up and do the work that we want to do. Because we knew work was going to change. We're going to do different things. But I want to be able to not answer to somebody else. I want to not worry about money. I don't care about luxury at that point, but I don't want to worry about money. So that kind of really gave us the drive to, okay, we could sacrifice for a couple of years. We only had one really bad year to sacrifice. That was really tight. And then it got better. So that's what, I mean, it was an interesting 3.5 years, but it flew by when we did it that way.
Well, it sounds like it flew by because there was never any time off. Like in the book, you talk about doing 39, 40 weddings in a year. Like that's almost every weekend. That's nuts.
2007, we called it the year of work. 37 weddings. Our second son, Nolan, was born. And I was still at the job. But we were also 6 months away from quitting. So I literally had a countdown. I'd walk out of the building, I'd be like, 100 more days, 99 more days, 98 more. So I would do that. So I'd use that as motivation. We could have quit sooner. We could have probably done it a year earlier and probably been fine. But I think there was something about the goal of like, let's get everything done. And then the day that we quit, there was no stress. And then 6 months later, the stock market crashed and it didn't affect us at all. We're like, we're fine. We'll be okay. And that was it's all only because we did that.
Because you didn't have any debt. You weren't kind of living beyond your means and you kind of built up this business on the side, this freelance business.
Yeah, I remember when Goldman Sachs, when it collapsed, Lehman Brothers, we had 29 weddings booked. They already put their retainers in. They weren't canceling the weddings. And, you know, we had people tell us, you know, everybody that was in the jobs said to us, like, aren't you worried about the security? And I said, well, here's the thing. Like, if one person or two people fires us, that's a small percentage of what we have coming in. And then we could always book another one. I said, but if one person fires you, you're done.
Yeah.
You've got, your income goes to zero. And I don't think, they looked at me like they never thought of that before. When self-employment always seemed so risky, I thought employment seemed so risky.
That's a really interesting way to phrase it. Yeah, I've got 30 clients. If one of them fires me, hey, it's no big deal. If 5 of them fire me, hey, it's no big deal.
We'll still be fine.
If you're relying on that one source of income, yeah, that's a little bit of a different position to be in. Okay, the question is, now you're still trading time for money. You figured out how to trade your time for more money through, you know, these yep. gigs. But at the same time, like if you stop working, the revenue stops coming in. Does that bother you at all? Or you're like, I don't mind that.
It didn't for years. We kind of just did our thing. We had, you know, Nolan was born and then we moved to Pittsburgh, which we just made a lateral shift. We kind of uprooted our business and started over here.
Okay. Well, tell me about that because this is, so my wife's side hustle is photography as well. And her partner kind of focus on doing wedding stuff. And we kind of talk about it being a location independent skill. You can take your camera anywhere you go, but kind of a location dependent business for your relationship with the different venues and your, you know, your word of mouth network here in California. So what was that like to like up and root a couple states away and say, well, now we're doing it over here?
The idea of it was very interesting to me. My family came for Christmas 1 year after Nolan was born and they left. And I looked at my wife and I said, what are we still doing here? And she said, it's funny you ask, because I was thinking the same thing. Because we had quit the job, the business was going well, but we're 15 hours from my family in New York and we're 8 hours from her family in Cleveland. So what are we still doing here? And I had confidence that we could run a business. And the only thing was our clients are all here. So we kind of decided we'd like to be able to move closer. And I chose Pittsburgh because I grew up as a Steeler fan. Sorry to the Seahawks fans. So I always knew Pittsburgh. I'd shot Steeler games here. I'd shot the NHL draft here. And I knew the city and I knew it was beautiful. And I enjoyed it. It's hard to get a girl from Cleveland to move to Pittsburgh. Her family's like, you're going to move. Why don't you move here? So we went and she loved it. And we said, okay, we're going to do this, but we can't do it yet because we have all these clients for the next year. So we said, okay, 18 months from now, we're going to do this. We're going to move in July of 2010.
Okay.
So I knew we can't just show up in Pittsburgh and get clients. So I learned a very big lesson in terms of relationship building and connections and a network because we built our network during that time. We basically went out and we got out there in SEO. We got our name built up a little bit in Pittsburgh and we started getting clients and we didn't book any of them. We basically took every client that came into us and we referred it out to the 10 photographers that we connected with the most in Pittsburgh.
Wait. So you built a website, like a separate website for like Pittsburgh wedding photography?
No, we basically changed everything over our website to Pittsburgh because we had everything booked for the year in Evansville.
Oh, okay. Change the SEO targeting on your own site to say, okay, we're in Pittsburgh now. And so you start getting leads.
Yep. But we couldn't take any of those leads. Those leads are 9 hours away and we have a fully booked schedule. So we said, okay, well, we could either just say no, or we could say, well, these 10 photographers here, we really like their work and they would really be a great referral partner with us. So why don't we just give everything we can to them and form a relationship? Not thinking, oh, it would come back to us. But you know, in the back of your head, you're thinking, well, that's the way it kind of usually works. So we sent all these weddings out. They started booking these weddings. Well, okay. So we kept sending them and then slowly they were sending them back to us. And so the day that we moved to Pittsburgh, July 19th, I had a meeting that morning for a wedding. We booked a client, a wedding higher than I think most that we ever booked in Evansville, higher price on the first day that we moved to Pittsburgh. And that was a referral from one of those people that we had sent to them.
Wow. So you didn't have to go through the whole like portfolio building phase. Well, you already had the portfolio. You just didn't have the network in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So I think that month we booked 3 weddings and we never miss a beat.
And just because the folks that you were referring to, maybe they were already booked up on that date or something. And they say, hey, well, these guys have been feeding me leads for the last year. So I might as well send them some work that I can't take.
Yeah. But I mean, we learned the thing, like Mark Zuckerberg says, the best referrals from a trusted friend. And that's better than an SEO, you know, a Google search. You know, we would book it that way. But when you've shot somebody's wedding, your wife knows this, you know, you shot somebody's wedding, they trust you. When you refer to somebody else that you trust, they elevate just so much higher in their mind. It's like, okay, you've now jumped over everybody else. And that helped us do that. So that was, you know, it's going to be my takeaway for you, for your audience too, in terms of deeper. Yeah, that's what got us from Evansville to Pittsburgh without much of a struggle.
Well, that's the beauty of wedding photography specifically, is that people, the age of people who are getting married, they know other people who are getting married. And so, you know, the following year, oh, you got to talk to my bridesmaid and all this stuff. Okay, so you moved to Pittsburgh and you do this. When you quit the newspaper job, was there any, I know you were counting down the days, but was there any hesitation in doing that? Like, I've got to give up my press credentials. I got to give up, like, this is what I went to school to do. You saw yourself as a journalist. You had access to these NFL games. Like, was that tough to walk away from?
That was the toughest part because I'd been a pro sports photographer for, I don't know how many years, 10 years at that point, 12 years at that point. And I was starting to work on a project. I wanted to shoot games in every stadium and arena in the country. And I had shot in about 60 or 70 stadiums at that point. Okay. And I wanted to keep doing that, but they gave me the credentials. You can't just walk into Heinz Field to shoot a game. Somebody has to credential you to get in there. And I was basically killing that. So I still remember I shot, you know, I used to cover Peyton Manning and the Colts. And I still remember I shot their playoff game versus the Chargers. And if they would have won, they would have carried on to go to the Super Bowl championship game. And if they lose, it's over. And they lost. It's the last game at the RCA Dome. And I remember walking out of there thinking, it was the only day I was like, I'm losing this.
Yeah.
I'm losing this part of my career that I love. But you know, this purpose was bigger than that. And I always knew if I want to, I can get back into it through freelancing, through other, not through a newspaper, but through some wire services. So I kind of put it back, you know, I put that dream on hold for a couple of years. And then once we got to Pittsburgh, developed connections again. And you know, now I've shot over 140 stadiums, 80 since then. So it's continued.
You thought that part of the work was maybe going to go away, but it turned out to not be that big of a deal. Like you were able to get access to get credentials through other sources. Like how did that work?
It actually got better because I mean, it comes down to relationships that you've built, people that you've met in the industry. You know, I make it a very big point of my every day to reach out to people that I haven't spoken to, just to connect without expectation, just see how they're doing. you know, send referrals their way and review their stuff. Like if they have a book or if they have a website, just do stuff like that. I heard something one time and they said, give more than you ever expect back before you ever ask for anything. And I was like, I love that. That's really interesting to think about because most people, they get desperate and they need money or they need a job. So they'll call you up out of the blue and like, oh, can you help hook me up with this? I'm like, I haven't heard from you in 4 years. Like, yeah, it's probably not going to happen. But if you just reach out to people, see how they're doing, send them a thank you card, stuff like this every once in a while. When you do say, hey, because my buddy Brian works for ESPN. And it was about 3 years ago. I wanted to photograph LeBron James with the Heat. I hadn't photographed him with the Heat. And he's a producer for ESPN. And we've kept in touch. And when he was in New York, I connected him with my brother who got him in backstage for a Broadway show. Just kind of, you know, you just kind of learn this. I didn't grow up thinking like a giver. I had to learn this. So we did stuff for him whenever you have a chance. And then I messaged him and I said, any chance I can shoot Game 5 of the conference finals with you in Indy? And he goes, come on down. That's all he said.
Okay.
Press pass waiting for me. The next day I'm 2 feet away from LeBron James. I'm like, wait a second. This is actually something that you can learn.
Yeah. So what's work look like for you today? Are you still doing weddings every weekend with the kids, like get a babysitter for the kids? It sounds like you're still doing some travel for sports shoots and stuff like that, but curious what the hourly input is looking like today.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. We just finished our last wedding of the year on Saturday. It was our fifth wedding of the year. We did 5 weddings this year.
Okay.
Which is dramatically down from the past. I still do some corporate work.
What's an example of a corporate shoot? What is that?
Like corporate events, like at a company, like some big corporations, Giant Eagle here in Pittsburgh, they hire us to do it. Like I have one on Thursday, but we don't do a tremendous amount. What I try to do, basically, I know how much we need to live on. And when that number can be low, we can really make the decisions that we want to work. So we don't have a mortgage, so it makes it easier.
So you're able to kind of sell the house in Indiana and pay cash or whatever in Pittsburgh?
Yeah. Yep.
In the Freelance to Freedom book, Vincent laid out an acronym called FRUIT to help you figure out your monthly living expenses. FRUIT stands for food, residence, utilities, insurance, and transportation. You add them all up, and that's your FRUIT number. And obviously, the lower your FRUIT number is, the less you're going to have to work, and the easier it's going to be to ultimately achieve freedom over your time.
Once we had no debt, we realized that number was about $3,000 a month. And I was like, wait a second, that's not that hard to do. If you can reduce that, then everything else is bonus. That's when everything gets good. So what we decided is we want to have multiple businesses that do that at the same time. So if the weddings slow down or we decide not to do weddings, it doesn't hurt us. If the coaching slows down or we decide not to do it, it doesn't hurt us. You have affiliate links, you have online courses. We want it to be where all we have 6-7 different things that could fill that in. So that's been over the last 2 or 3 years that we've started thinking more like a business and less like a freelancer.
Okay, so you've transitioned in from doing these, I'm going to come do this shoot for 10 hours and I'm going to get paid for my time and deliver you the pictures, to more time leveraged businesses such as the online courses. Are you creating content around this stuff? Like you don't have an audience that is turning to you and saying, well, I'm going to learn photography from this guy.
No, because we never wanted to teach it. I would say the biggest mistake we made in the process, I was talking to people recently about this, is we always had people asking us about photography and we never wanted to teach it. We're like, no, that's not for me. I want to shoot. I don't want to teach. And if we would have started this back in 2010, like so many other people did, we would have one of those things where everybody knows about it. We never did that, which was a failure on our part. You know, you learn. But another thing that I learned was collaboration. And this is the hardest part as a freelancer. It's like, I do it all myself. I don't want to collaborate. I want to run my own thing. But I met a guy named Kyle Schultz who runs a thing called Schultz Photo School. And he basically teaches parents how to take better pictures of their kids. It's a very successful business. I met him. I was in a mastermind with Aaron Walker and we went to a retreat. And it's funny because we were each telling about our vision and he told about his business, about this Schultz Photo School. And I went and told about my business and about my one-shot project to shoot in all these stadiums. Okay. And he was sitting right behind me. And we sat down, we looked at each other and I said, I have an idea. And he looked at me and he goes, yes. And I laughed and I said, you don't know what I'm going to say. And he said, okay, go ahead. I said, I should do a sports course for your school. Because he never taught them any sports photography, but you have all these parents that struggle with taking sports pictures of their kids because it's blurry or it's out of focus. So he's like, that's exactly what I was thinking. Let's do it.
Okay.
And just like that, the idea had started. And
so that solves your audience problem.
That solves my audience problem because he has a huge email list. So I get to create the content and he does the funnels and that. And we teamed up and kind of like peanut butter and chocolate coming together. And all of a sudden you have a Reese's peanut butter cup. That's kind of what happened. So I didn't, as much as I should have built the audience, the other thing that I learned was like, if you have a skill that you could bring to somebody else, you could use other people's audiences as a collaboration.
Okay. Well, tell me about making this course. So you film this thing. What did that look like? I mean, that's still like a daunting process to try and make from scratch. Like, are you using your own kids as guinea pigs? Like, what's going on?
No, basically the thing is I had written an outline for this course 2 years earlier. I basically said I'd heard about doing these. I would follow Dan Miller, and he always talked about Swiss dollars, like sales while you sleep. He goes, I am not a fan of trading my time for money. I want to do it where I make something once and I could sell it 1,000 times.
Okay.
And for years, I'm like, what does that even mean? I have no idea how to even relate to that. You know, I don't know products or digital. I don't. And then once we decided that's an idea, I kept hearing his voice saying this. And I'm like, okay, wait a second. I wrote an outline for a sports photography course. I wasn't thinking for parent. I was thinking for beginning photographers.
Okay. To kind of like do what you did, like to get on the sidelines at stadiums.
Yeah. Never thinking, oh my goodness, there's about 2 million parents who want to take better sports pictures of their kids. They don't want to make a business of it, but they just want to take better pictures. Never thinking that this could be an option until I saw Kyle's business and his model. I'm like, wait a second, there are some people out there that probably would want this. So I took that outline. Elizabeth and I sat down. We spent one day and we wrote an outline to it, but based towards a parent and not towards a photographer that knows everything about, you know, their cameras and stuff like that.
Okay.
This is for somebody who really composition, lighting, their camera settings, things that they wouldn't normally might not get. So we wrote that out and presented the modules to Kyle. He loved it. We got together a couple of different trips and laid out the outline of the course. And then we got about setting a recording. And then over a couple of months, we recorded.
Is it you on camera? Is it you talking over PowerPoints? What's
on camera? Yep. I actually got PNC Park here in Pittsburgh where the Pirates play. I got him to this is Power of Relationships. We got to film the first couple of modules in the dugout at PNC Park. Which was a fun start to the course.
Awesome.
The original idea was to do every module in a different stadium, but that was kind of cost prohibitive and time prohibitive at first. So let's make some money with this thing before we spend $100,000.
Yeah.
So we did it in one stadium. Yes, that's why we did that. Then we filmed it in a couple of different locations. So that was about from April through July, we filmed the course.
Okay.
And we launched the charter course back in May. The charter launch was back in May.
Okay. How'd that launch do? What'd you price it at?
Priced at $97. For the first day, it was $117 for it opened on a Friday and closed on a Wednesday. So the first day was 97 and the rest of it was 117, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was open for 5 days and it did well. It did better than I thought.
It did well. How much did it do? It did crazy well.
It did. Yeah. The first day, that's the funniest part. The end of the Friday night, I took a shower because I was sweating a lot because it was so such a interesting day. I kept, you know, going back and forth, going for different walks. Like, is this really happening? We launched on Friday morning at 6 o'clock. People had already found the site and bought before it even actually launched. So people were like doing searches for it. People that had heard about it.
Okay.
And we told the story about me at the newspaper and I was struggling and making $32,000 a year in this newspaper job. And with the same skills, same everything, Kyle messaged me the next morning. Here are the numbers for the first day. And we made over $32,000 in the first day. And I was like, isn't that ironic how that worked? It wound up bringing in $52,000 for the charter launch. So a whole different world opened up. But it was the same skill and mindset that it took me to shoot the pictures that we could do the same thing to build a course from.
Yeah, a whole different world, man. That is nuts. 30 grand in one day. Of course, you got to split that with your partner in crime, Kyle.
Yeah.
But now you have an asset that you could sell over and over again. Like, it's not going to go out of style. The tools may change, the concepts and skills remain the same. What's next? Are you kind of turning that into that's the thing with courses. Is it an evergreen course people could come and buy at any time? Or is it like...
No. We're actually in the middle of a launch right now.
Oh, okay.
We're in the middle of our fall launch that closes tomorrow.
How's it doing so far?
It's going well. It's not going the way the first one did, but we didn't expect that because we didn't have a whole new list to work from.
Okay.
So in terms of, we did affiliates, in terms of stuff like that, where it worked, it's going very well. Everything that we had expected has happened. But the point of this launch was just to get it out there. And then in 2018, when we start doing more of a webinar-based thing, where we teach it that way and then people come in, it can happen every day now. There could be a webinar every day. So the whole world, in terms of, it's not just about two launches anymore. It's just continual. So if people find it, they can go learn a free course from us. And then if they want to buy, they could buy. If not, they can just continue getting updates on it or nothing at all. So it's very low pressure.
I like it. Man, that's nuts. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Okay, so you've got the course, you got the freelance biz, you started doing some coaching from vincentpuglisi.com. What else is going on? You got the book deal coming out. Like, tell me about the book.
You would think, like, it's funny because I go from, you know, working time for money to where I had these two big things for the year. And within 2 days, my first shipment of books arrived on Thursday and the course launched on Friday for good. And it was like, wait a second, this is not life like I remember it. This is a yeah. whole different world. So the book just came out. It launches January 2nd. We're in the whole process of promoting that and getting the word out on that. And so that launches on the 2nd. And then I'm in the middle of writing a course for that because I've learned you can take so much information and bring it more to life through a course as opposed to, I love the book, but there's so much more that I didn't get to put in there that I can, you know, step-by-step guide people with. So that's what I'm in the middle of developing right now.
All right. So you kind of managed to free up your time and keeping it busy with all sorts of different projects. I love it.
That's the whole thing, was kind of like before, when we're stressed with time and money, I didn't even have time to think about these things. I was so busy. How do I get the next client? How do I deal with invoicing? And by getting ourselves financially free, now the most important thing was it freed up mental space. And that mental space is what led to all these ideas. I never was able to do that before because I was always kind of so stressed doing in the time for money thing. So now when I can control my time, the ideas keep going. It's just a matter of implementing them.
All right. Well, I'm excited to see what you come up with next. So vincentpuglisi.com/SH Nation. I understand you got a gift for the listeners.
I would love to give away 10 copies of the book to your audience. I'll pick them randomly. So it's not, you know, not the first 10. So if anybody goes and goes to my website /SH Nation, I'll give away 10 copies of the book. And I created a document, which is the top 10 tips that I learned going from 32K in a year to 32K in a day. So it's a really cool document. It gives like the things that we learned along the way.
Okay.
Very valuable to us.
Awesome. Well, we'll link that up in the show notes at sidehustlenation.com/Vincent, since Puglisi is a little bit harder to spell, but opt in over there for the 10 lessons that they learned from going from 30 grand a year to 30 grand in a day and be entered to win a copy of his book. I'm about 2/3 of the way through it, really loving it so far. So definitely check that out. Vincent, man, thank you so much for joining me. Let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Oh, well, first of all, thank you so much. This is just a pleasure and an honor to be on your show. I love your community. I love everything you're doing. And it's just an honor for me to be talking to you. But yeah, number one thing, it really comes down to relationships. It has created everything that I could attribute that has been successful in my career, in our life, has been intentional relationship building. And it's not just a matter of like asking for something, like we talked before. Always give before receiving. It has opened so many doors because so many people are so used to being asked to do stuff. And if you just really think in terms of what can I do to help them out? What can I do to support them? Can I buy their book? Can I leave a review? Can I send a referral to them? It's just a trusted resource. And it's just something, it builds trust. People like you and you build great relationships from that. And then from there, all types of opportunity arises. So that's concentrate on real authentic relationship building from the start. And so many opportunities happen.
So true. It comes down to relationships. Vincent, thank you so much. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Vincent Puglisi as much as I did. I met Vincent at Podcast Movement in August, where we bonded over some late night nachos. But as you heard, a very inspiring and very relatable dude to talk to. So we actually recorded a short bonus round of Q&A. I'll play those for you after my top takeaways from the call in just a moment. But first, let me tell you about the fine company that helped make this episode possible. It is FreshBooks, the affordable small business accounting solution that's built specifically for entrepreneurs, freelancers, and side hustlers like us. In your business, you probably know the awkward and maybe exhilarating feeling of wearing all the hats, from marketing to sales to accounting to customer support. And you heard Vincent say it, shoot, I'm a freelancer. I'm used to doing everything by myself. Where FreshBooks comes in is in trying to make that accounting hat fit a little more comfortably. I've been a FreshBooks customer for years, and the reason is they just make life easier. I can drop a professional-looking invoice in under a minute, send it over, and get paid. If you haven't already, check out the freshly redesigned FreshBooks platform. They've gone through feature by feature to make it even more intuitive and easier to use. In addition to invoicing, which was the feature that drew me to them in the first place, they've got time tracking and expense management tools built right in, and the handy FreshBooks mobile app works wherever
wherever you do. See how the all-new FreshBooks can save you time dealing with your paperwork so you can go out and spend more time making your hustle happen. Visit FreshBooks.com/sidehustle to start your 30-day free trial today. That's FreshBooks.com/sidehustle and enter the Side Hustle Show in the How Did You Hear About Us section. All right, my top takeaways from this call with Vincent. Number one, are you using your skills correctly? That little insight from Vincent's dad is golden. You have a skill, but you're not using it correctly. Your current employer is obviously one buyer for your skills, but are they the only game in town? Would somebody else value this more? And it kind of reminds me of the value-based pricing discussions we've had with Matt Inglot and Jonathan Stark on the show, episodes 176 and 154, if you want to check those out, where in an ideal world, you're not selling your time, you're selling a result. It was interesting to me as well to hear Vincent's reluctance to taking on these other forms of work. Hey, look, I'm a journalist. And so maybe there's takeaway 1.5 is to swallow your pride. Sometimes you got to do the thing you don't want to do or maybe hadn't considered doing to get where you want to go. Takeaway number two is figure out how much is enough. In the book, Vincent writes that he and his wife recently became millionaires in terms of net worth, which is awesome. But he said, hey, look, we've never made more than $130,000 in a year. And in most years, a lot less than that. But once they'd killed their debt, it wasn't about working harder and earning more for the sake of earning more. They figured out what they needed to live on and did enough to get there. It was more about the time freedom to pursue work they enjoyed, to be able to say no to projects that they didn't want to do, to be able to spend time with the kids, and now to tackle new and exciting projects. The quote, "Everybody thought we were crazy," stood out to me because even though those are goals, those are goals we'd probably all say we wanted, but we don't always act like it, or at least act like it with such discipline. So how much is enough, really? Takeaway number three is your network is your net worth. Vincent said this in his number one tip. It's all about relationships, and it's so true. Just think about the examples from this story. I mean, booking a wedding client from the instructor at your baby class at the hospital, sending free leads to the competition, the quote competition, and having them return the favor, getting field access at sporting events, and even collaborating on a course launch because you happen to put yourself in the same room at the same mastermind retreat. Your network is your net worth. And that's actually something we touch on in the bonus round as well, where Vincent talks about his hour of giving habit, which I love. Stay tuned for that after the outro music. I also ask him about his favorite stadiums to shoot in and how he got his book deal. Notes and links for this one, along with a free downloadable PDF highlight reel summary, are at sidehustlenation.com/Vincent. That's it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen. And I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show, where you'll meet a friend of mine who I met on Fiverr, of all places, but who's actually started a pretty awesome side hustle, making five figures a month, talking about air conditioning. Hit the subscribe button in the podcast player app, and it'll be automatically beamed to your device next Thursday morning. I'll see you then. Hustle on.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.
What brought you to Podcast Movement?
Same thing, relationships, just meeting people. I'm going to do a podcast for the Freelance to Freedom. I bought Pat Flynn's course, so I've been going through that, and I'm learning from that.
Okay.
It's very good, but I don't think it's necessary. But, you know, that's another one of those things where he's helped me out a lot, and I want to support people with their products. So, you know, I bought it. He asked for a review for it, so I did a video review for it. And then he wound up endorsing my book.
Nice.
Which was sweet.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, man, you got a little inside jacket blurb from Pat. That's awesome.
I know. It was the type of thing where it all comes down, like, this is a big part of the course even too, is how to do relationships authentically. Because I think so many people do it incorrectly. I get these questions, like, how do you get Dan Miller and Seth Godin? And it was all the same way. Like, Seth Godin, I love his work. So I support his stuff. He has a conference in New York. I go to it. Then you get to meet him. And then you email back and forth. And I know people that got, so many people that got their book rejected from him. And I emailed him. I said, would you have any interest? And he said, send it over. And then the next day I had an endorsement from him. I'm like, how'd that happen?
Wow.
And it all happens because you invest beforehand. So yeah, I think it's just a huge part of it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool stuff. When's your next shoot?
Thursday. Thursday, Nick, I have two more shoots for the year. I have two more. Oh, we didn't even talk about the trip. Like, that was kind of the big part. Like, we're leaving January 9th for 3 months to go on the road as a family.
Wow. Where are you taking off?
Yeah.
To? Or just around the country road trip?
Yeah, we got a house in Tucson for a month, and then we have a house in Oceanside, California for a month, and then we're picking the third month.
Okay.
So yeah, as soon as the book launches, we're out of here. We're getting out of the cold.
Taking a vacation. And you got any homeschool things, so you can do it.
Yeah, we could do that. That's because honestly, if we had longer to talk, it's be like that's what led to the homeschool idea. Like, we have this freedom, but the only thing holding us back is they're in school and we don't really like the way school is going anyway. So why don't we do this ourselves?
Yeah, it's one of the depressing things. Like, for our friends who have kids that are a little bit older, they're like, well, we can travel, but we can only go like these weeks. We're like, that's obnoxious.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wait a second. Like, the school is holding them. And now, you know, the first couple of years, it's okay. They're loose. But once they're in fourth grade, you can't take very many days off. So that was the last hurdle for us. So we're like, okay. And the whole thing is, you know, even teaching them life skills. We have an entrepreneurial class that we're building in our homeschool. We talk entrepreneurship every day in homeschool. We talked about the course last night in terms of if this happens, if that happens. Because I don't want them to kind of go through the whole indoctrination that I did. That by the time you're 20, you can't think for yourself because you've been told what to do your whole life.
Yeah. Such an important skill.
Yeah.
To reverse that thinking. Say, look, you're going to be in charge of making your own way more than likely.
Yeah. Because those jobs are going away that way. It's much more of a freelance entrepreneurial world. But we're not teaching kids to do that. So I don't want them to learn that when the bell rings, you just run. You just go to the next school. You know, go to the next class. Like, that's the way you train people to be subservient and to be employees. Like, okay, I guess you have to do that. That's life. My kids, like, if you don't get your work done, you don't play outside. That's the way life works. If you don't work, you don't get to play. So you get your work done sooner, you get to go outside sooner. So, you know, some days they get it and their work's done by 10 o'clock in the morning. Some days they're throwing a fit till 4 o'clock. It doesn't, you know, either way, you're not going outside till it's done. So yeah, it's got its ups and downs, but it's definitely worth it.
What's been your favorite venue to shoot in so far?
Oh, that's such a good question. And I don't have a great answer for it. I loved the San Francisco Giants baseball stadium. I love that. New Orleans has a place in my heart because I shot the Super Bowl, my first Super Bowl. That was the game where I felt like I made it. When I walked on the field, when the Patriots played the Rams.
Okay.
Right there, 9/11. You two played the halftime show and Bono was right next to me. And I was like, what is going on? Like, I'm on the field of the Super Bowl. Like, how did this happen? You know, there's so many good ones. Like we talked about, the ones in San Francisco were, and Oakland were depressing.
The Oakland stadium is not the nicest in the world.
Oh. It's awful. It's awful.
So what's like? How many are left on your list?
There's about 40, but I think they just built a couple new ones. Like, Atlanta has a new football stadium, a new baseball stadium.
Yeah.
And then it's going to go to college because there's so many great college stadiums.
Well, gosh, it's going to be years to go through all the college stadiums.
I'm going to be 90. I'll be in a wheelchair. And they're like, just shoot your stupid picture so we can get you out of here already. I'll have my cane. Yeah, college. I mean, because it's only Saturdays. It's not like baseball. Like, I could do a 5-day baseball trip and hit 5 different stadiums.
Yeah.
The plan was, Nick, for this trip was to be out there so I could shoot the Rose Bowl January 1st. And then they came up with January 2nd for the book release. And I was like, I can't do that. I got to be here for the book release and then I can go. So next year we'll be out there for that.
So did you pitch publishers or like how did you get the book deal?
Well, that's the funniest part is that's the relationship thing. We could do a whole different episode on it because I joined Aaron Walker's mastermind and I'm writing this book and I have no expectations for anything with the book.
This is just kind of like a pet project of your own, like, you know, in the back room kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We were on vacation and Elizabeth's like, you know, you got to write this book. You got to finally, you keep talking about it. So I went to write it. I'm thinking everybody writes a book and nobody gets published. What are you going to do? So I'm in Aaron's mastermind and he asked, okay, somebody give me a win. Somebody give me a big win for the week. And I said, I got a win. I said, I sent my book edit to a publisher and he said, this actually could do something. He said, this really, if this got in the right hands, this actually could do something. And Aaron said, he goes, well, how are you publishing this? And I said, I don't know, how else do you publish? He said, well, if I could introduce you to a publisher, would you be interested? And I saw everybody's eyes open up in the group because it's on Zoom. You can see everybody's faces. Yeah. And they're all eyes lit up. And I was like, well, of course I'd be interested. Why wouldn't I be interested? So I went to a doctor appointment that day and I came out of the appointment and there's an email from him to David Hancock, the publisher of Morgan James Publishing out of New York. I'm like, that's interesting. And David's like, okay, you know, let's set up a time to call. Here's my calendar. So I set up a time for the next day and it's supposed to be a 15 or 30 minute call. It turned out being like a 90 minute call and he loved everything. He said to me, he goes, what's the proposed title of the book? meaning what's the title of the book that I'm going to change? Because they probably hear so many different titles
right.
that aren't good. So I told him the title. He goes, I like that. Okay. So I told him my story and we had a very relatable story. He goes, okay, send me the book. I'll have my team of five editors look at it. He goes, we get about 5,000 books a year. We only publish 140. So the chances are very low, but send it along. And then 3 weeks later, I got an email. They're supposed to let me know on Friday. And on Wednesday morning, I open up my email to go to work. And Elizabeth's upstairs doing homeschooling with the kids. And I came upstairs. And I said, read this email. Is this real? And she's like, oh my God, it was a contract from Morgan James. And I was like, you got 19 days after I talked to Aaron, I had a book deal. Only publisher that I sent to.
Well, that's awesome.
And I'm like, what is going on? This is not supposed, I'm supposed to get rejected like 50 times first.
But like you said, relationships.
It's so key and people abuse it. If you spend an hour a day just on, like you'll see in the book, I'm not sure if you got there, the hour of giving. Like I do it every day. I'll take an hour and I'll leave reviews and I'll do all the stuff, send thank you cards, just start the day off not thinking about myself, thinking about others. Because it's hard, you know, we're selfish creatures and I am. So it's like, I have to start the day. What are you doing for other people? So it makes your stuff less important, you know, not thinking about all the time. But that stuff, that leads to more progress than my 8 hours of working on my own stuff.
Yeah, the hour of giving. And now with the hindsight of being at this for 12, 15 years, you can kind of see like, okay, that stuff is really what pays off down the road.
It is. And I wish I would have learned that earlier. Because it was always like, you know, just like everybody else. No, I need to worry about myself. I need to get my bills paid. But nobody wants to help you when you think that way. They want to help you when you're a giving person. And I'm not a naturally giving person. I am a naturally selfish person. You know, it's like what? So this was a hard thing for me to change. And I'm like, I just want this to actually be how my mind works from the start. And I have to train myself to do it. I know it sounds bad, but it's just true. It's just the way that I've been wired. I think a lot of people feel the same way.
Now that's a little bit of rewiring, yeah, forcing yourself to do it every day. That's an impressive habit. I'll commend you for that because it's not something that comes natural to me.
No, but what's funny is you wind up loving it because you get better response from doing that than when you do stuff for yourself. It's like, wait a second, okay, it's not about me. I'm helping them out, making them feel good. My buddy Ken, his son just wrote a book. He's 12 years old, put it on Amazon and we bought it. It's like $3. And I look at my thing yesterday and there's his book. It has no reviews. I'm like, crap. So I put everything down. I wrote a review for him. So I gave his first review and the kid's got to be thrilled. You know, he's 12 years old. He gets a book review on Amazon. It's like, man, if we could just teach that stuff, the world would be a better place.
It's so true. Well, Vincent, man, thanks so much, man. We'll catch up soon. Let me know when you're out in California. I'll do the same if I ever find myself out in Pittsburgh on my stadium quest. I've got like
that's right
19 down, maybe 10 or 11 to go.
Oh, you're on a, I didn't know you were on a quest.
Only Major League so far.
Major League Baseball. Have you been to Pittsburgh?
I have not been to Pittsburgh.
Okay, where's the next one to go to?
I'm missing a lot of the Midwest.
Okay, yeah, it's either one or the other. If you're out here, you miss all the West Coast.
Yeah.
If you come out here, Sarah, we'll do a little tour if you want to spend a couple of days because maybe we'll get you in as an assistant.
Yes.
Football is the best as an assistant because you're on the field walking around.
Okay.
That was the one with Michael O'Neill, you know, when we did that.
Yeah.
He was like a 9-year-old boy on the field. All of a sudden, you know, he like the whole like Michael O'Neill, he got like this little persona, you know, kind of cool California guy. He was like a little kid. I'm like, you got to calm down. Like, he's like running on the field with the players. I'm like, you got to back up a little bit. Like, you're going to get run over. Like, you're not that big of a guy. You got to come over this way. So he was like live streaming from it. And I'm like, you can't do that. The NFL is going to shut you down. You can't live stream from the field. You're going to get my press pass pulled.
Yeah.
You let me know. We'll do something.
Sounds good, dude. That's awesome. All right. We'll catch up soon.
All right, man. Thank you so much.